God plus enough willingness. I'm Elizabeth talking about step four. Okay. Reading from page 13. I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the essential requirements. Simple, but not easy. A price had to be paid. It meant the destruction of self-centeredness. So I'm a firm believer that, so I've done the four step two different ways. I did a four step without steps one, two, and three being very important. And I've done it where steps one, two, and three were very important. My history in AA, you know, we didn't even write anything down until we got to step four. And now I know a lot of people have heard about the line by line big book study. I did that for the first time at 14 and a half years sober. At that time, I was not powerless over alcohol in my life at that time, but I was doing a lot of other things in my life that you would not know that I was sober 14 and a half years. I was miserable and crazy. I was in a situation I couldn't seem to get out of. You know, I had all of the isms, all the bedevilments. And when my sponsor said, we're going to read the big book, I was confused. I had read all these other great books, you know, all these self-help, wonderful books that people had written. I had done a lot of self-examination. I had a lot of knowledge about my condition, a lot of knowledge about my condition. However, I couldn't seem to live life in a functional way. I was getting my electricity turned off and stuff like that because I was staying up till 4 a.m. fighting with somebody that I was in a relationship with. Just crazy, crazy stuff. And she had me do a first step that lasted 3 months, was on the unmanageability of my life by me. And when I got to the end of that, I was so miserable. And I said to her, am I supposed to feel this bad? This has never happened before. And she said, yes, because you need to have no place else to go but God. And so for the first time, I understood the difference between 12-step recovery and everything else that I had done. This wasn't about me fixing me. This wasn't about me figuring it out. This wasn't about me coming up with a better philosophy of life, you know? And so when we read pages 60 to 63 a few times, like for a week, and then did the third step prayer, I was ready. You know, I was in a different place than I'd ever been before that. I understood what it meant for me to have a new experience. I needed to become unblocked so that I could have that new experience. You know, the blockage is me using my old ideas, my old patterns, my old belief systems to run my life. Like many people, I was a victim. I didn't know it. I wouldn't admit it. But I'd walk around thinking that if you just acted differently, I'd be okay. If you liked me, I'd be okay. If you saw me as smart and capable, I'd be okay. Everything I touched needs to be successful because it's a reflection on me. All of these beliefs that I would ignore so that I didn't have to change them. You know, and I always tell people the most important sentence for me personally in that big book is on page 60. It says that I need to be convinced that a life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Because if I think I'm doing okay, then I'm not looking for a new way of life. I'm just not going to. I'll just be over here watching Netflix, you know, and doing something else. So I have to be humble enough. I have to be humbled by looking at the absolute truth. Be rigorously honest. I don't like it. It says it on page 25. None of us like it. Still don't like it. I talked to Sherry the other day. I talked to another woman last week. I got homework from this other woman. She sent me, I was laughing because I was glad and mad at the same time that she sent me down this path of discovery on something I didn't even want to look at. I'm really good at leaving closed doors closed, you guys. I don't want to open those doors. I'm good. Just enough, you know? So, but here's the thing. And it's so funny. Every single time, this part of me is just so resistant to change, to doing anything differently, to actually doing this stuff and considering that there's a better way. you know, because of the knowns. I want to cling to those knowns, you know, and that's on page, I love the book. So I have a few places I know where they are. Page 53 says, we didn't like to lose our support. So I continue to do things even that end up badly because just because they're comfortable, you know, I set myself up in situations that are the same over and over again, even though they're bad, if I really look at it, because I know them. That's much more comfortable than a blank page, right? It's the hole in the donut. Who will I be if I'm not this? And that's where that trust in a higher power really comes in. I have to be sick of myself enough, sick of my way of life enough that I say, okay, God, please take me, all of me, show me what you want me to do. And then I'm ready to look at the truth and I'm ready to go, okay, let's see how I'm blocked. I love doing a four-column inventory. As described in the book, there's some other great tools out there. There's a free download of the Big Book Awakening 4-step. I love that as a tool. You can Google that. And it helps me to see because I can't see. I don't want to see. I can't see. But when I sit down and I write it out, first column, I'm mad at somebody or I don't like what they did. Or for me, it doesn't even have to be a full-blown resentment. It can be just a lack of serenity surrounding something, something I wake up thinking about, something I'm in the shower thinking about, something that just consumes my mind. You know, as an alcoholic, as a person, I'm going to have emotions. I'm going to have negative emotions, positive emotions, whatever. I'm going to have grief. I'm going to have sadness. I'm going to have guilt, remorse, shame. These things are part of being human. But as an alcoholic, I have to find out where's the line between emotions and resentment. Because if I'm walking around with an emotion and I'm waking up in the morning thinking about some situation that I can't accept the way it is, going to bed thinking about it, waking up in the middle of the night thinking about it, then now it's crossed from a mere emotion to a resentment. And that's the thing that's deadly for alcoholics. And I have to get into action on that. Again, requiring the humility to recognize the fact that I have a deadly disease. I'm the one that needs to change. I've done a thorough step one, and I know this. I've conceded to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. And if I drink again, I'll die. And I really believe that. I drove drunk all the time. I drove in blackouts. I thought I could drive. I always drove. It never was a question. I don't remember ever getting in a passenger seat saying, no, I'm too drunk. Like never, ever, ever. You know, now I'm one of those people that puts on makeup, texts, like has phone, like I just do everything. I have for 40 years now, 41 years. So the combination of those two things would probably kill me pretty quick. So am I willing to do what AA suggests so that I can have a new experience based on higher power and not myself? Yes, absolutely. So what does this mean? What I love about the four steps. So I feel like the whole world and situations and beliefs, it's like they have a rope tied around my ankle. So if I'm mad at Sherry because of something she said, hi Sherry, using you as an example, then it's like she has a rope tied around my ankle. So she can pull it anytime she wants. So I'm going to bother Elizabeth. And she's not even there. She's not even anywhere near me, right? This is all in my head. And I believe that the inventory process is a way for me to get to cut those ropes. So you all can act however you want, and it doesn't have to bother me. And I want that peace and that freedom. So I do it. So for me, I write down the four columns. You know, I do a third step. I review that. Sometimes when I start writing about an inventory item, you know, I look at things like the third step. How am I playing God? How am I not letting God be in charge? Just to kind of pray about that and think about it. And then I begin writing. And I write the person's name. And then I start to write and call. I love column two. I call it column two, ranting. You know, that's where you get to talk about the other person and what they did and just let it go. I have people I can call and just let that fly. And they know that's what it is. They know that I'm going to work towards getting back to God and being peaceful. But there's a lot of energy sometimes in that anger, that resentment. And sometimes I just want to be heard and you know, somebody say, oh, sorry that happened to you. You know, and then they know I'm going to move on. I need to move on now. Okay. We got a little time now, had a little temper tantrum. about what happened. Poor me. Okay, now I need to move on. And then I get into column three. Oh, by the way, I don't always read my sponsor the whole column two because she just doesn't even want to hear it. But I just do it for me. You know, there might be a whole page of just complaining that she didn't want to hear. And then I get to column three. I recently learned from my wonderful husband who's in the room. He learned a new way of doing column three, which was to change the order that's suggested in the book. So I tried this and I have found it to be really useful. I start with the ambition. That's the simplest one. It's what did I want here? You know, and it might be something really great, like I want a good relationship with my sister, you know, but who doesn't want something like that? Of course. Why wouldn't I want that? I want everyone in my home group to be happy. You know, these are the things that I want, you know, so that this propels my actions. This is what I'm looking at. Then I look at personal and sex relations. I often group them I just do it that way. No one else has to, but I do. Personal relations and sex relations are about my beliefs about how people are supposed to act. Like, you know, AA members are supposed to be honest and accountable. I expect more from you guys, you know? people are supposed to be truthful. People are supposed to be nice to each other. Sponsors are supposed to stay active in AA so you can keep them as sponsors, you know, all this stuff. I have these expectations of these general ideas about everybody in the world and how they're supposed to act according to Elizabeth. And I'm walking around with this, I'm applying it to all of you guys. And I'm pissed off when you don't live up to it. Right. Cause I'm God in my own head and everybody's supposed to do what I think. And then I look at pocketbook, if there's financial involved. My sponsor says you can also do anything of value, like your time, you know, if you feel so inclined, if you're pissed off at how much time you spent on something, you can write that down. I usually, unless it really applies, I end up skipping that one. And then security usually nails me pretty well to the board. Security is, what did I need from this to make me okay? I am using the outside world to fix the insides of me. I've got a hole inside, a God-shaped hole, they say, and I'm doing everything out here to create my life such that I'm okay on the inside. You know, I think people, like using the sister relationship as an example, I think people will judge me, or I think I'm going to be lonely and unhappy without my sister. You know, I need her to be okay. I need that relationship so I can be okay on the inside. I need things attached to me to be successful so I can look good. It fills that up. It gives me something that I think I need to be okay in the world. And next to each of these, by the way, I forgot to say, you can write fears. You know, next to each thing you write, what's the fear about? There's a fear associated that I won't be okay unless this works. I'm afraid I won't be okay. That's usually it, right? And then the personal, self-esteem and pride. This is where I really love that Big Book Awakening as a tool, because pages 60 to 63 in the Big Book talk about how I'm God and I'm like the director of the whole show and you guys are just actors and you're supposed to do what I say. And I think I'm this great director and I should be self-sufficient and I don't need a God. I don't know if we have any other God players in here, but I'm definitely a God player. I don't really need any help and I can do this all myself. And so what they do is they put those together in this tool. There's plenty of four-step tools out there, guys. Like, see which one you like. If you want, you know, whatever your sponsor suggests or whatever, there's tons of stuff out there. But I really like this because it says, self-esteem is the role that I assign myself. It's who I think I am. So I think I'm so smart and capable and self-sufficient. And I'm so good at everything. And you guys should just listen to me. And whenever somebody's not listening to me and they screw something up, then it's affecting that little view I get to have of myself. You're affecting this now. You're screwing it up. And then pride is the rule book that I gave you that you didn't read. It's the role I assign you. You're supposed to respect me. You're supposed to see how smart I am. I've got some home group members in here and I'm really telling on myself here. Cause Anyway, I see you, John. Hi. You know, and I find for me is the long, so I've been sober since January 3rd, 1988. So that's 35 years. I've been doing this a long time. And what I do is I, you know, when newcomers come in and they have like 400 resentments, I can group those into different themes, like fear of authority, or there's different groupings that you can end up doing. And so, one thing that I have at this point in my life realized is every single problem I have is about that I don't want to trust God. Every single one. I don't want to trust God to be in charge. He didn't check with me to let me know what was happening. He didn't ask me if I was okay with what's going on. So all these details can change, but it's always the same thing. It's always the same thing. So when I get done with the third column, oh yeah, let's go to the fourth column. Forgot about that. Selfish. I used to think selfish meant that I wouldn't share everything in my house with you. Like I'm the kind of person, like if you come over, I'll probably give you things to go home with, right? And I think, well, I couldn't possibly be selfish. Selfish means that I think about how I'm affected in every situation. What am I getting out of it? I don't know it. And I tell you what, 2 years ago, my sister was going to have a party. And my first thought, oh gosh, it's going to be great. She's having it at her beautiful house. She's going to invite all the cousins. We're going to see the kids. Maybe I can help her. Maybe I should call her and ask her if she needs help. That was not my first thought at 32 years sober. My first thought was, what am I going to do when she starts drinking? First thing I thought, that was it. Boom. It was like knee jerk reaction to think about me and how I'm affected. And I do that. I don't know. I don't know if anyone else has graduated out of that or they're so spiritual and dependent on God that they don't do that, but I still do it. And sometimes I don't notice. Sometimes I get so far down the road with something and I can't see it. And that's where I have to stop and go, oh, that's right. I have a child on the spectrum. She has to consciously see others. She has to be reminded to see how others are affected, what other people's experience of her is. I find that I have to do that too, that I have to consciously remember what your experience is and how you're doing, and take that thought and think of others. Self-seeking are my actions based on the outcome that I want. I do things, I manipulate, I you know, sometimes I unintentionally just have things happen and I think, God, but it's like, you know, like my sponsor, I keep on, she's not in AA, right? And she's not doing a lot of AA. And I keep trying to encourage her to get online and go to meetings and she's not doing it. It's making me mad, you know? And I'm, oh, can't you, you know, and I'm trying to help her and talk to her about her technology. And when she, you know, telling her about the back porch group and how she'd love it. And all these people over 50 are sober, just like her, she's not doing what I want. And I'm mad. I want her online. You know, I might have good motives for it, but I'm still blocked because I'm spending my time thinking about what she needs to do. Playing God. Fearful. I don't know about anyone else here, but I'm one of those people that when I'm angry, I'm usually afraid, but I don't want to admit it. So it's really good for me to sit and write it out, you know, and really look at what's going on there. And I don't like to do it, but when I'm alone with my notebook and my pen, occasionally I'll type things out on a laptop, but usually I go to the notebook and pen first. Then I get quiet enough, pray and ask God for help, and I can write it down and see it on paper. And it often surprises me. I am really good at hiding from myself. I had a friendship end. The person thought something about me that I knew wasn't true. And I tried to talk to her about it and it became clear that it just wasn't going to be resolved. And so I really rely on my conscious contact with God. And I knew not to push and just kind of let the situation be. But it was on my mind for 2 weeks straight. And I knew I needed to write inventory about it. I think Kelly knows what this is about. I see Kelly. Hi, Kelly. And I realized that I knew the friendship was kind of ending a little bit. And I didn't know what to do. And I was really sad. I had the emotions. I knew it was a resentment because I was thinking about it so much and it was blocking me from being useful. And so I started to write it. I sat down and I wrote. And what I realized was two things came out of the writing. One, I wanted her validation, and I didn't want to admit that to myself. I wanted validation from her about the situation we were in. I wasn't like okay with just my own truth, knowing, you know, I still wanted her validation. And then I also had a fear that I wouldn't have other friends, you know, that would see me for who I am and let me be me. You know, it was so, I didn't recognize either of those until I sat down and started writing. And then dishonesty, you know, is also about self-delusion, where I think that I can do something that I can't. You know, looking at the facts, and that's the thing, you know, to look at facts instead of feelings is often very important. The first question, you know, if somebody comes to me and says, Elizabeth, you did this, or you hurt my feelings or whatever, the very first thing that I need to do is think, did I? What did I do? Which part of this do I need to look at and own and be accountable for? Because this is about me changing, not you. You can do whatever you want. That's not my business. I mean, unless you ask me for help, obviously, but this is about the fact that I need to change. Because if I stay the same person sober as I was drunk, then I will drink again. And you know, the fifth step is such a beautiful experience. God, I'll never forget the first one I did with my sponsor. And it was funny because the very first question she asked me was, all right, what didn't you write down? And I had something. How did she know? You know? It was so funny. And you know, and I told her, and I remember the very first week I was sober, when I told somebody some things I had done, and they'd done worse. What freedom that is. Like, that makes you feel so much better. I'm not the only one. I love the fifth step. I love when I speak something out loud and read it to somebody. I really don't like it. I forgot. I love the result of it. I hate doing it. I hate looking at stuff. And sorry, the chat distracted me. Hi, Emily. And I'm looking at something on paper that I don't want to admit to my sponsor. Like, I don't want to read it out loud. I didn't want to admit it to myself, you know. But it helps me become right-sized to do that. There's some things I still, you know, like, I'm judgmental when I look on Facebook and people are doing their perfect pictures, and you're just like, some of that stuff. And I don't like it about myself, but it's still there. And it's something I need to tell on myself about. I always tell the newcomers, the one thing I've ever done right in 35 years is that when I'm in pain, I share it. I come and speak about it. I don't keep it to myself. I'm so glad that I've always done that. Even when I got away from AA, there were a couple periods that I got away from AA, and then I would, you know, something would happen and I would realize that I didn't have a program and that I needed to get active in AA again. And I would go to a meeting and raise my hand, even if I didn't want to. And I would feel my heart pounding and I'd think, oh, I hate this. I remember when I was 28 years sober, we had some changes in the family that were very painful. And I knew my program, I knew, because I was resentful and it was running in a loop in my head. You know, what was happening in the family. And I couldn't enjoy my son who was sitting next to me. And at the time he was about 10 years old. That's a red flag for me. But if I'm not present enough to enjoy my children, I know something's wrong and my program is weak and I need to go take action. I know what all those red flags are for me. My chest gets tight. My neck gets tight. Something's wrong, you know? And so I went back to AA and I raised my hand, even though I didn't really want to. I knew I had to. So I'm really glad that, thanks, Courtney. You know, that we have a program that encourages us to share what's going on. And the fifth step process is so beautiful that I can truly share who I am with God and another human being and not live a lie, because I lived a lie my whole life before AA. And it's what made me need to drink, probably, to pick up that drink. And then I get to find out I'm alcoholic after I pick it up, right? But, you know, this is about the causes and conditions. And I want to share, I asked some home group members before, like, what what's bothering you, you know, what's got you, what about, you know, that you need to write inventory about. And, you know, I have been harmed in my life. There have been people that have harmed me for sure. They're freaking a-holes. We're being recorded. So, they truly did harm me, and it was harm. But I'm an alcoholic. You know, again, I have a deadly disease. I need to be free. So I can have hurt feelings about whatever it is that occurred. And acceptance doesn't mean that I like what happened. It means that I'm accepting that that's the reality of what occurred. And I don't need to get stuck there. I can now move on, and I can ask God. It says that our dark past is our greatest asset now, because we can use it to help other people. And I do believe that pain is the thing that bonds me to others. It's the thing that makes me reach out. When I am without my human resources and I'm struggling and I don't know what to do, that's when I reach out to you. That's when I really let people in. And I'm so grateful for that. Like, I'm so grateful to recognize that, because I will. It's not when I'm in joy, you know, when I'm happy that I really let people in. But as far as like other people and how they're behaving, you know, sometimes the best thing I can do is just really pray for them and be open to helping them if they ever want help. You know, not everyone in AA is ready for that help. They're not ready for recovery. They're not ready to be accountable. Sometimes they come in and they step all over us. And you know, I have recently had a situation where I bent over backwards to help someone, and she didn't like it no matter what. Like, there was just not going to be a way out of it. And I felt terrible. And I called someone, and they said, you know, oh, wait, I think it was Sherry. She said, you know why Bill Wilson didn't want to use the four absolutes? Because he knew the four absolutes of absolute love, absolute honesty, absolute unselfishness, absolute purity. You can look up the four absolutes and what they're for. He said, because he knew that we couldn't do it as alcoholics. Absolutely. So I'm going to fail. I'm going to let people down. I'm going to be human. Sometimes I expect myself to be like the superhuman, because, you know, partly because I have so many years of sobriety, and it's just not true. And I can't let that separate me from anyone else. I can't let it push me to a place where I'm not honest or willing to tell people like I'm screwing up, or I'm having a hard time with this, you know, and I feel really bad about I feel like I really let somebody down recently. That I wanted to help. I didn't want her to have a bad experience with me, but she did. And I'm not sure what to do about it other than pray and wait and ask God for any opening that I can have. I once made an amends recently that was 9 months after the things that occurred, but I think it was perfect timing, you know, and I could explain that. But that's another story for another day and another step. I just love everybody. And you know, I love this process. I fully believe that it works. I know that it works. And even though sometimes I don't like to do it, work the steps, they actually work, but sometimes I don't enjoy it. I know it actually works. And thanks a lot for having me, you guys. I look forward to hearing from you in the breakout rooms. That's it.
Wow, Elizabeth.